of your weekend is structured. But I don't really see a scenario where you would or could be able to redo that workout and not be dead.
Sure. So couple new people showing up saying that the one workout that feels kind of like an absolute is doing workout number two on Saturday. The ramifications of doing it earlier and what it would do to the other workouts, I think, is really top of mind. And then the ability to potentially have that rest day on a Sunday is can be really powerful. So from there, I'd say the sort of close second would be workout number four. In, you know, 8 or 9 out of 10 scenarios, we see this workout on a Monday. The ability to rest up and get some of that sort of central nervous system back. It's kind of funny to say that with the programming that we put out. We've got 4 workouts across 6 days. Obviously, the volume is not super intense. But anytime they do one of these high rep wall ball workouts in competition with that adrenaline going, people are going to feel the ramifications of that. What scenario do you see an athlete doing number four prior to Monday?
Yeah, I actually have an athlete who falls into that camp who is very proficient at the gymnastics movements, so workout three, and is not so proficient, or rather, I don't want to say not proficient, but the heavy barbell is kind of the goat for the weekend. So
yeah,
I haven't had a conversation with this athlete yet to kind of talk about that, but given that both are due on Monday, my suggestion is actually for that athlete to do workout one on Thursday, which is probably going to be a recommendation for a lot of people, and then workout number four on Friday. And then there's probably a built-in rest day in there somewhere, just knowing that trying to move that heavy barbell under 4 days of fatigue might not be as ideal as a gymnastics heavy workout where this person is really, really proficient with gymnastics. So that's a pretty specific instance, but an instance nonetheless.
Sure. And I think the idea is, am I potentially going to need a second crack at this workout? Obviously that just can't go on a Monday.
Yeah. Yep.
Question for a lot of athletes is either starting with, in our opinion anyways, workout number one or workout number three. So being able to do, if you struggle with gymnastics, even if you just struggle with either the handstand pushups or the pulling movements, being able to do that fresh and knowing that in the instance that we're talking about, there's the potential for that rest day on a Sunday, a lot of athletes are going to need to do workout number three first. And I don't love I get bothered by the mindset of like, we're going to do this workout first because we're going to retest it. You're not going to feel the same in that second submission window as you do when you're fresh now coming off of a taper. So, when you're thinking about it from that perspective, I think start with your audit of number three. Like, what is this going to be like for me? Is this going to be super challenging for me? Am I going to get stuck somewhere? Am I potentially going to have to play around with two separate instances where I attack the workout a little bit differently? And that's how you'll find out. If the answer to that question is like, yeah, I'm going to struggle with this one, I like it first.
Yeah, I think the other consideration is that, again, that the juggernaut is workout two. We already talked about that being on Saturday. Like, ideal situation, I think, is you do that workout on Saturday and you have Sunday as a rest day. If you've already done workout three, like, excellent. You only have one more workout to worry about for the whole weekend. But I think, like, workout two and three have the ability to really like interfere with each other if they're done too closely together. And, you know, if it's the right athlete and the right intensity, like the upper body demand of workout number two is probably like neglected a little bit. Most folks are looking at the squat and jump demand, which is correct. I think that will be worse than the upper body demand, but ultimately it's like 150 pseudo pushups. And for most athletes, the wall ball is the upper body becomes the limiting factor, and it's all very similar kind of musculature that you're going to use for a muscle up, for a handstand push up, for a even a, you know, borderline a toes to bar sort of deal with the hip closing action. So definitely a reasonable thing to consider doing workout number three earlier, especially if those are kind of goat movements for you, or if quite honestly, like, you know, you're not going to get very far in the workout. You know, maybe you get it out of the way early and it's do it fresh. And it maybe it doesn't actually do a whole lot to your upper body just because the intensity isn't quite there for you yet.
Yep. Other scenario is very straightforward. I love event three, so I'm going to do event one first. Like, there are some athletes out there that are blessed with the push and the pull when it comes to gymnastics. And those athletes, I think, need to tackle workout number one first. The other thing to bring into this equation, now that we've addressed all of the workouts, is your specific schedule. So, like, I've had, I've had athletes do workout number one already. So basically all of my athletes are doing workout number three tomorrow, and it's either because they've already done number one and they're moving on to number three, or because number three is that priority. So in that instance, with our Thursday starters, we've got, for a lot of them, 3-1-2 sort of in order, those 3 days in a row. And then either we get a retest on a Sunday or we rest, and then we do number four there. Before we move on from order, does anybody have any questions? I'm not exactly sure how this works, Ted, if people speak or if they just talk in the chat here. But if you guys have questions about the order specific to you, we'll do those now.
If anybody has questions, if you use the raise your hand or request to speak button, we can get you on the stage and listen to your voice.
And if you're shy, you can type it in the chat.
Yeah, you can also type it. That works too.
Hey guys, I just did, this is Seamus. I just did workout number four because whether I hit the 225 was going to be, you know, kind of an iffy for me. I didn't know if you guys addressed whether or not to do four first. I did that one first and I just finished up one. And then I was going to do three tomorrow. So I don't know if that's just totally wrong order, but I just figured I'd get that one out of the way. Don't know if there's any other, like, strength, you know, athletes for that, where that 225 bar is a question. I just wanted to get that out of the way first.
What's your availability for the next 5 days?
I booked childcare for the next 3 days. So I have tomorrow, and Friday.
So, and what about the weekend?
Yeah, no, Saturday I could maybe do one in the early morning, but that's about it.
And yeah, I mean, if you're struggling with the lift, and you want to do that fresh, I think that's also kind of leans into the same concept as number three. We just see people hitting a roadblock quite a bit more in number three than number four if you take a larger sample size of athletes.
Yeah, it's got it.
Yeah, and Seamus, I think, like, because you've already done one and four and have just established that you kind of have basically tomorrow and Friday as your availability, then you're kind of almost fixed to, like, hey, probably workout three tomorrow and then finish the weekend with workout two, because you're not going to want to do a whole lot after that. And then, you know, maybe you do have some time that you could redo, you know, I guess workout four. Maybe you give workout four another crack on Monday, see if you can get one more rep on the barbell or something like that. If you know that, like, the heavy barbell is really going to limit you, similar vibe to doing, you know, hey, the gymnastics limits me, so I'm going to do that first. Maybe it's the barbell limiting you and you do that first. So not a bad strategy, and obviously dependent on your schedule.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, man.
Hey, Seamus.
Any other questions on order before I get on my soapbox about warming up?
If you guys have any questions that come up too, you can just throw your hand up and we can go back to it.
So warm-ups, those are all on Fitter. Kyle jumped right in and got those on Fitter. So we've got warm-ups in there. We've also got anybody that didn't qualify for quarterfinals that wants to do the quote-unquote scaled versions of these workouts. Those are also in there. You're going to notice a theme, very standard sweat check activation. Some of them have primers. Some of them are a bit more working through reps to get yourself ready. But you can make significant moves up or down on the leaderboard depending on how you warm up. It's just like all of these workouts have a significant amount of work in them. And if your body is surprised the first time it sort of gets punched in the mouth a little bit, it's going to be a problem. I recognize most of the names that are listening to this right now. And I know that we all kind of communicate pretty regularly on the different Discord channels. So I think you guys know how we feel about that whole sweat check idea. But for anybody that doesn't know, basically where, you know, you guys are in front of your computer or your phone right now, most of the blood in your body is near your organs, you know, midline area, we'll call it. And the way to get it sent out to your arms and your legs and, you know, around, you know, the upper body is to just basically, you know, activate muscles and slowly increase heart rate. It takes about 12 to 15 minutes to do it. Otherwise, when you get into high intensity, we get into that panic mode, we get into a bit more fight or flight, and most of the blood is going to be pushed down to our lower half. And there's a reason why randomly when we don't warm up well, like you really feel it. You're like, there's no way that I could possibly feel this bad at this point in the workout. So just that time of year where this sort of stuff is incredibly important. And if you're looking at it and it looks stressful and it looks like it's a little bit too much, I would suggest like the trust factor of going in and doing it, but maybe get there a little early. Give yourself a little bit of extra time to get through it so you don't feel like you're like being pushed to a place that you shouldn't go to. And then all of it is, you know, semi-negotiable, right? So it's 12 to 15 minutes on the sweat check, can be nice and easy. We like activation after that and then movement prep to go through there. If the primers look a little aggressive, feel free to knock those down a little bit. It's really just about blasting through some familiar movement patterns and getting your heart rate as high as possible.
I think something else you guys should keep in mind is like the warm up and the cool down is also setting you up for success for the entire weekend. It's not just about that one workout. It's if you go into, you know, a workout, a super intense quarterfinals workout unprepared, you are going to execute that workout in a suboptimal state. You're going to beat yourself up. You're going to beat your nervous system up more than it needed to be. And then same thing on the cool down. Like if you don't return your body to kind of that safe, parasympathetic nervous system, you're continuing to operate at a high level of alertness that is just going to detract and pull energy from the stores that you have. So don't think about it like, I mean, do think about it as preparation and the cool down from that specific workout, but you're also setting yourself up for success for at least four workouts, you know, maybe more if you're retesting and you just like every little bit of help you can get as far from a recovery standpoint starts with your warm up. So
Hunter and I shot some videos for you guys not too long ago. Those will get uploaded. But for the sake of anybody trying to get into any of these workouts, we'll just go not rapid fire, but somewhat quickly through these and give you guys our like general thoughts on them. So workout number one, we call this the black hole zone. It's not short, it's not long. It's that 12 minutes of work in a 15 minute window. And your pacing within the workout needs to reflect that. I like the idea of a, you know, you're not going smooth. Like this is a competition. Like you're going to go out there and get to work. You're setting baseline numbers in round one that you get to chase afterwards. So there's a bit of unknown, right? Am I going to get 12 snatches in round one? Am I going to get 20 snatches in round one? And you're working your way through it. You're going based on feel. You're using your athlete IQ. But then in the subsequent rounds, you get to sort of chase that a little bit. The athletes that we've watched do it so far really seem to react well For lack of a better term, to the 1 minute rest period. So those snatches are actually much more consistent than you might think they're going to be. I think the row is right smack in the middle on purpose because it's a bit of a moneymaker if you spend the full minute on there. But you're coming off of a very high intensity movement and you're going into something where you're going to need to be able to get some reps. So we talk about this pretty regularly. You got 3 minutes on, 1 minute off. And the other two movements are metabolically more demanding than the row. So your row pace should be at or below what it would be for 3 minutes on, 1 minute off. And then the step ups are going to get worse and worse as the workout goes on. They're the third movement that you have to do each time, and they suck on their own. So it's the type of thing where you're going to want to make sure that in the like 55 to 60 second range on the rower that you know what final pull is going to get you your last calorie. And then you go over and pick those dumbbells up and kind of get to work on that. And again, the fatigue of the whole workout, obviously you're gripping a barbell, then you're gripping the rower handle, then you're grabbing the dumbbells. That last round of step ups is going to be a bit of a gut check there for sure. Anything to add to that, Hunter?
Only thing to add is, and it's popping up in the chat, Seamus is mentioning it too, like the snatches are a trap if you decide to go, you know, to rip out a whole shitload of reps in the first minute, or more specifically, a bunch of touch and go. We talk about it in the video, you know, 3, 2, 1, go, you've got a fresh set of touch and go because you're comfortable with the movement. You know, we're certainly not going to like a reach set. It's like, as soon as you start to feel that a little bit, drop the bar and then settle into that quick single sort of space. But it's all just kind of, you can think pretty much all of these reps, all of the reps in this workout are almost equivalent. Some slightly weighted heavier than others, depending on, you know, basically your preferences and your, like, you know, how much you like these movements, but they're all very similar. So it's kind of about picking your spots and making sure you're not overextending on one at the expense of the other. But I would expect a lot of numbers to be very similar across the board, across each movement, as well as like from round to round with only a slight drop off. If you've got a significant drop off in round two, you might have entered the danger zone a little too soon.
I've seen a person push the snatches a little bit and as a result have to back off of the row, and I've seen vice versa, and I'm not completely convinced that if you're within an acceptable range of reps that you're not just sort of trading one for another and that they wouldn't change too much. So in a lot of instances that would be a strengths and weaknesses choosing where you're going to go grab an extra movement or two, and for some people, for a lot of people, that would be on the row, and for some people, that would be on the snatch. Moving on to workout number two. So like we said before, really like this one on Saturday, obviously prior to the deadline. It is, in my mind, 150 burpee box jump overs for time, essentially. I think that you need to be able to move at whatever pace, you know, we're talking all the way from potentially 15 reps a minute down to like 8 or 10 for the, you know, the 25% qualifying is a kind of a wider range this year. You have to keep moving on those. You got to warm up in a way that shows you what the cadence of, you know, whether I'm sure people have seen the standards now. So you got to step down. You don't necessarily have to really be lateral. But like, what is your first nailing down the footwork, you know, making sure that, you know, the leg that you're bringing, you know, sort of your gather step to then jump is the one closest to the box. For some athletes, the step down could be challenging based on the distance. But you need to not only get your footwork down, you need to find a cadence that's going to be possible for 20 minutes, essentially. Like, and that's a kind of a tough question to ask for a lot of athletes. It's not something you see super often. So I think that is number one, the most important part of this workout. I think if you do the wall balls a little bit faster than someone, even a different version of yourself, you're going to pay for it in the burpee box jump overs, and they'll either even out or you'll actually be slower. Or you do something like 5 sets of 10 with basically no rest in between to keep your heart rate down a little bit more and then work your way through that. But I don't want to say the wall balls are a non-factor because they play so much into the metabolic demand of this workout, but they shouldn't really change your score that much. I think that's a really important part of this.
We've seen some extremely fit affiliate athletes pull a sub 5 minute Karen doing 15 sets of 10 wall balls with like a negligible rest in between. And that's not a challenge to do 50 wall balls with a, you know, 50 or 5 sets of 10 with as few, as little rest as possible, but it is a perfectly reasonable strategy. Cause when you think again about totality of volume for a lot of you, Karen, you know, 150 wall balls is somewhere between, you know, 4 minutes if you're really comfortable with the movement, and it's like 6 or 7 minutes on kind of the slower end. And you have the exact same number of burpee box jump overs, which take 2 to 3 times as long per rep. So easy math is 5 minutes of wall balls and 15 minutes of burpee box jump overs. And that should be kind of enough to convince you like, hey, I can just move smoothly and try to keep my composure on these wall balls. And then, you know, don't let that pace go from 15 burpee box jump overs a minute to 8. That's a bad strategy. Recognize that this is a 15 to 20 minute workout, probably closer to 20 for most folks, and you know, attack accordingly.
Very long warm up, very long cool down. Make sure that, you know, your squat position feels really good, that your hip flexors are ready for the step up and the step down, taking your time getting ready for this workout specifically, and then dealing, you know, doing the damage control afterwards, longer cool down, soft tissue work. You know, you need a lot of food, you need really good hydration afterwards, and you probably need to get
access to a
soft tissue.
Got access to cold. Like I'd be in a fucking cold tub for a solid 5-10 minutes after that sort of workout, just to minimize the soreness, especially if you have to, because of your schedule, you have to go in and do another workout the next day.
Yeah. And just so you guys know, when you are doing that, biggest thing is dropping core temperature. So it doesn't need to be an ice bath. It just needs to be cold.
Yeah.
So you want to get to a point where you're getting your core temperature back down. You do that, you get protein and carbs, and your body knows, no longer catabolic, not breaking down muscle tissue, trying to sort of rebuild it. So it's a really good protocol to have after something really bad like that. Workout number 3 is interesting, with the 25% for sure. When you go from the 1% to the 25%, you're just going to see like a vastly different you know, sort of scoring and reps and sets and that sort of thing. But you should notice right off the bat that it's a gigantic trap to funnel you down to that last round. I mean, you could push the beginning a little bit more and then not be able to do very much towards the end. You could break it up a lot and have less time to attack. And I think like there's going to be a very wide spread on this. What I said in the video that we shot that I think is super important is that you have forward thinking the entire workout. There are second, third, and fourth order consequences to every decision that you make within this workout. So, you know, you've got, say you love toes to bar, you got 3 sets of 20. What happens when you do 30 handstand pushups and 60 toes to bar, and then you go try to do strict handstand pushups and rope climbs? So you got to be really thoughtful about, like, I like the idea that Hunter and I both decide to do 3 sets of 20 toes to bar, even though he's way better at them than I am. The movement cost is lower for him. He will move on in a completely different state than I will. So it's not always about like Hunter can go do 20 in a row 3 times. It's he can break it up the same way I would and then just cruise along like nothing happened. Whereas for me, it really feels like 60 reps. So that's the kind of thing where you really want to make sure that you're chopping things up in this workout. And then when you get to the strict handstand pushups, know how many sets you have left and continue to ask yourself, after what I'm doing right now, will I be able to go again? Talked about, like, if you were doing a set of 10 and to open and you wanted to do, or you're doing your 10 reps to open the strict handstand pushup set, and you decided you wanted to go 6-4. Kick up, you do 6, they're easy. You go to do your 4, and either 2 or 3 in, they start to get really hard. Kick down, shake it out, go back up and do them. Nothing's going to happen to you doing a single, doing a double. Something will happen to you if you grind in this workout prior to when you need to. They'll go away. Like, you could even be really good at them and they will completely disappear on you. And then you get to the wall facers and you're like, originally we're like, why would they just put 10 here? And you'll know exactly why they just put 10 at that point in the workout for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of obvious muscle interference that's happening here. And there's a little bit less obvious and just like the cumulative effect of just blood pooling in your forearms, biceps, you know, anterior shoulders, triceps, et cetera. The obvious being like, okay, the handstand pushups get harder. Got it. There's a grip component to the toes to bar, basically all the pulling movements, the toes to bar, rope climb, and muscle up. And then there's a really sneaky midline component with the closing action of the hips. If you guys did quarterfinals the first year when it was rope climb, GHD sit-up, pistols, you know, nobody realized they needed their hip flexors and abs for rope climbs until they didn't exist anymore. The muscle up is even worse because that's like, you know, you can inch your way up a climbing rope. You either get over the rings or you don't. And so, again, all of these movements are designed specifically to interfere at varying levels with other movements. A lot of it will depend on you personally, but it will fuck up everything from your waist up. So there's absolutely no need at any point in the workout, except for rep 19 and 20 of your muscle ups, to be reaching for anywhere close to muscular failure. You get to the muscle ups, obviously we're getting through those as quick as you can, but at no point does a set of toes to bar get hard. Does a set of handstand pushups get hard? And the only other thing with the movement efficiency that I think is like a common thing is that folks like to think about the rope climb as far as like, how quickly can I get up the rope? I think that's a bit of a trap right in the middle that's sneaky. A lot of time under tension, or rather a lot of a smaller kind of step up the rope. Maybe if you can climb 15 feet in 2 pulls confidently, you take 3 or 4 pulls to get up there just to keep your heart rate down, just to keep your hip flexors in midline out of the equation as much as possible. And it's also a little bit less taxing on the grip because we don't have to pull quite as far on each given rep. Much more about just being consistent with that movement. That's probably probably the movement that would go away the least quickly for most people, but is still certainly a factor. And if you do it incorrectly, will really mess up your ability to do muscle ups not that long after.
Last thing I'll say, some people will execute really well and get to the muscle ups and do their first set and be like, these actually aren't as bad as I thought they were going to be. And that can be a trap in and of itself, because we need commitment to movement efficiency prior to breakdown of like musculature. So I need that big backswing, hip extension, you know, legs swinging through to kip the dip. I need that on rep 1 and rep 2 and rep 3 all the way through until the end. Anytime you feel good in these movements and you get a little bit of that upper body pump, our mind tells us to basically move in the exact opposite way that we should. And you need to shut that off and go back to your training, what you've been doing all year long, going through those. Anything else on number 3, Hunter?
I think that's it.
Workout number 4, another one that's going to have a fairly wide range when it comes to talking about strategy. A lot of athletes are going to knock out that first barbell touch and go in 20 or so seconds just because they've got a minute of rest coming up and it's not that metabolically demanding for them. Don't be ashamed by hearing that and going, I don't really like touch and go. I'm a fast singles kind of person. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. Those things equal themselves out over the course of 10 minutes. she got the minute rest there. And then we see a lot of athletes sort of like, we move down one level each time, depending on the type of athlete you are. So you become the athlete that we talked about doing those singles in round two as a high level athlete. So we move on to the fast singles as the high level athlete. And for some people, this might be the round where you do need to start having, like if this is pretty heavy for you, this is a round where you need to start having your judge give you 3-2-1 go to pick it up at 10 seconds a rep, 12 seconds a rep, 15 seconds a rep, something like that. You want to get that rep done. You want to be really dynamic. You want to drop the thing and then just let your heart rate settle and really relax for whatever you're giving yourself, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 seconds between reps. And then from there, to be honest, like you push a little bit in one place and you're probably going to lose a rep or two at the next barbell. So it's really just about, again, knowing which barbell is going to be your final one or the first one that's really heavy for you, and having the right person around to give you the count of, like, you get to 225. Again, some athletes are going to be able to do one of those, you know, every 9 or 10 seconds. And then a lot of athletes are going to need to do one every 15 to 20 seconds. But it can be incredibly helpful to have someone standing there looking at the clock, paying attention, checking in on you, and telling you when to get back on the bar.
I really like the timed sort of strategy, because ultimately all of you are going, I have, you know, there is one of those barbells is the barbell that you're going to end on. I know that's not like, obviously that's true, but the point is like one of them is going to be the sticking point for you. And at some point it's heavy enough where like you are going to look up at the clock and have a lot of time left, and either, you know, you're on the last bar and you find that you have a lot of time, or you're on the second to last bar and you know that's where, you know, your workout is going to end, and it's just a matter of getting as many reps there as you can, because it is heavy at that point, you know, in that 70 to 90% range for a lot of folks, maybe even heavier. That's where having that clock kind of management done, either not ideally by your judge, but somebody who's like, hey, you are doing a rep every 20 seconds or so, because that, you know, for me personally, that 245 bar at that point in the workout, that's like, yeah, maybe it's every 20 seconds I'm doing a rep, and that makes it a lot more approachable than, you know, fuck, when do I go again? Okay, I'm going to walk. I'm going to go take a chalk break. It's like, no, I can take my chalk break, but I know in 12 seconds, like, I'm picking that bar up again, because that's the threshold line where I can do another rep. I'm not going to fail it, but I'm not going to like it. And that's fine. You're not supposed to like it. You're supposed to do it.
So we opened talking a little bit about, like, this is 4 workouts and for some people in 6 days, not a whole lot of volume compared to what you're used to doing. And give you, there's like the warning side of it, and then like the exciting side of it. The intensity at which these workouts are performed is different, and it will always be different. And even if it's a top 10 semifinals athlete, there's something sort of different that they're bringing to the table from, you know, an adrenaline standpoint, an intensity standpoint. So taking care of yourself and prioritizing the, you know, the sleep and the warm up and the cool down and the stretching and just like really being on top of that kind of stuff can be incredibly helpful. And then on the other side of it, the speed at which you perform workouts on Tuesdays and Wednesdays is not what you're looking for in these 4 workouts. You only have to do 4 workouts. You know, maybe you redo 1 or 2 of them. But you need to go 10% faster the whole workout. Like, I don't want you guys to think like coach is telling me like put on Rage Against the Machine and get up to 2000 cals per hour in round one of your max calorie section. But those moments where you don't want to pick up the bar and you don't want to stay at a 1050 cals per hour, you want to put the dumbbells down in the step ups, things like that. Those are the moments where you feel that and you just kind of do it anyways this time of year. So take really good care of yourself and ask for just a little bit more all the way through, just a little bit more grit. And I think you guys would be pretty happy with where you end up on the leaderboard. Any questions? So you can raise your hand and chat with us, or you can throw it in the comments section. You going to do any of these workouts, Hunter?
Are they all too heavy? 20-pound ball. Fucking nonsense. Maybe do the gymnastics one. I don't know. Sherb fucked me up with today's affiliate workout, so.
Kind of a nasty workout.
That's spicy. Yeah, we'll see. I usually find myself ending up tackling the one I like the most at some point over the weekend, but no guarantees.
Should we sprint the roar cows and get 2 cows as fast as possible? Victor, I can't tell if you're joking. Like, is there like a trick to like skipping a calories? Okay.
Remember sprinting
on the rower.
Remember, like, man, I feel like it was close to a decade ago in the open. Someone posted a video somewhere of like how they game the row by like doing a full pull plus a half pull, and it just like it tricked the rower and got you like mm-hmm. people thought it tricked the row, it tricked you, and then it was
it's like a rower cheat code.
Yeah. That's what I thought of.
Cool. We'll give you guys a couple more minutes to ask questions if you need to. But if not, my closing thoughts were, you know, just the idea of, you know, really taking care of yourself and asking for a little bit more. And that we're here all weekend long. I do kind of my remote coaching for the most part through Discord. So I'm always on here. So you guys tag me if you guys have any questions moving through it. If you're nervous about a strategy, feel free to ask a question or shoot me a DM. And like I said, all the warm-ups and all that stuff are up on Fitter already.
Yeah, just remember you guys have spent a very long time, you know, a year of data collecting, training, trying to figure out exactly where your threshold lives and whatnot. And no need to be overly worried about, you know, performance. Like, a little bit of anxiety is good. It means you give a shit, but ultimately there's an element of you got to trust yourself a little bit here. If you know, if you don't take that step to trust yourself, you know, maybe push a little bit harder than you think and you learn and discover something new about yourself. That's kind of where those gains are made and why things like, you know, the open and quarterfinals are valuable, especially for folks who, you know, just are really looking to get as fit as possible. Maybe you never go to the CrossFit Games, but you learn kind of where your line is and where your threshold is and how to push for the future.
Cool. I think that's it. Thanks everybody tuning in. Thanks everybody who listened to the recording when they got a chance. And like I said, I'll be on Discord all weekend. Hit me up. Good luck.